Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter, Inferno, by William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Ken Jackson. With performances by James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Mort Shelby, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Laura Harris, Bradley Smith, and David Jordan.
Frank Morgan was riding upwards through a ravine at the edge of the Caprock when he smelled smoke, but he had a restricted view of the landscape. When he reached the top of the ravine and came out on the prairie, he saw the smoke, sure enough. Big billowing clouds of the thick gray stuff rolled across the Texas plains, driven by a hard wind that threatened to pluck the hat from Morgan's head. He reached up to hold it on as a frown settled on his weathered face. A fire was coming toward him, leaping across the prairie at dizzying speed.
Looks to be about a mile away, Stormy. There's a southwestern end down yonder, but that wall of flame stretches off to the northeast farther than I can see.
Morgan had a good horse under him, a hammer-headed dun mare that he had been riding for a while. It took him only a second to realize that he could gallop hard to the west and get safely out of the way of the blaze.
That settlement out there, though, it's smack dab in the way of the flames. They don't have that option, Stormy.
Even with the threat that faced him, too, Morgan paused for a moment at the sheer horror of it. The flames were 8 or 10 feet tall and devouring ground at a terrifying rate. Morgan could see some of the townspeople scurrying around like ants, panic-stricken by the fire's inexorable approach. Some of them clustered around the public well, hauling up water to fling onto the buildings in the futile hope that they might turn back destruction. Others leaped onto horses and fogged it out of there, escaped their only thought. Still others tried to load a few belongings onto wagons, buggies, and buckboards, bartering time to flee against their possessions.
Poor stupid bastards. Everything they have, maybe their own lives, is about to be smashed away from them through no fault of their own. And there really isn't a damn thing they can do about it.
He didn't have to worry about anything except saving his own life. He turned his horse. Morgan leaned forward over the dun's neck. He urged it on to greater and greater speed. The wind shifted a little in Morgan's favor.
No chance now that the fire might blow on past the settlement without destroying it. Not that they ever had that much of a chance to start with.
Morgan looked over his right shoulder and saw that he was getting clear of the danger. He kept the dun running hard for another few minutes, just to be sure that another sudden wind shift wouldn't send the flames in his direction again. It wasn't long before he was well clear, though, and could rein in and turn his mount. He watched as the blaze reached the town and the gray smoke turned black and billowed even more as the buildings went up, one after the other. Morgan could have just ridden on, but there was a reason he was known throughout the West as the Drifter. Ever since he had gotten a reputation as a fast gun when he was just a young man, he had been on the move most of the time, always riding, never staying in any one place for very long. At first, maybe he had been searching for happiness. But as man after man fell to his blazing speed and unerring accuracy with a Colt, every opportunity to settle down ultimately had been lost. So now, in middle age, Morgan drifted, one of the last of his breed, seeking only to be left alone, wanting only not to have to kill yet another snot-nosed punk out to make a name for himself. So it was an unaccustomed impulse that made him decide to ride into the ruined settlement after the fire had roared on through it and finally burned itself out when it reached the edge of the Caprock, the time-eroded escarpment that divides the High Plains from the rest of Texas. Morgan turned his horse.
The hell with it, Stormy. Let's go!
Yeah. Morgan came to a stagecoach road that cut a path through the charred landscape and followed it into town. Or, rather, into what was left of the town, which wasn't much. The walls of the adobe buildings were still standing, but their interiors were burned out. The frame buildings were gone, right down to the ground, except for their foundations and the occasional partially consumed timber. Inside the buildings were just heaps of ashes.
Damn, that fire was hot.
During the war, Morgan had seen towns that had been bombarded by artillery and then set afire.
That's what this looks like.
The people who had gotten out in time were trickling back in now. Morgan saw burned bodies lying here and there, which accounted for the sickly sweet stench in the air. The wind had finally fallen still, too late to save the settlement.
dead! Oh, you son of a bitch! You son of a bitch!
Morgan turned his horse and saw a middle-aged woman pounding frenzied punches into the chest of a man who stood there looking stunned as he absorbed the punishment. Stocky, with thinning white hair and a neatly trimmed beard, his expression was that of a man who'd been shot in the gut. He looked like he was dead and just didn't know it yet. Frank Morgan had seen that expression all too many times. He hadn't liked it then, and he didn't like it now.
You're Felton! You're Felton! You're Felton!
The man made no attempt to stop her. But grief overwhelmed her, and she fell to her knees, then toppled over onto her side and lay there in the ashy dust, covering her face with her hands. The man finally seemed to become aware of Morgan sitting there on the dun. He looked up at the drifter.
Who are you, mister?
Morgan walked his horse over to the man.
Just a fella who's passing through. I'm sorry for your loss, for all the losses here. I saw the fire coming, but there was nothing I could do to help.
Despite the hard shell he usually cultivated around him, he wasn't an unfeeling man.
Well, nothing anybody could do once the fire was lit.
You mean once the fire started, don't you?
Nope. That fire was started of purpose.
He looked around at the destruction surrounding them.
My wife's right. This is all my fault. I founded this town. I was the mayor. This is my home. And I burned it down.
I know I'm a stranger around here, but you don't look like mischief to me.
Any chance you have some whiskey? I sure could use a pull.
Sure do.
Morgan dismounted and took a bottle from his saddlebags.
Here.
Oblige. Name's Al Bowman. I think I'll sit a spell until I get my wits about me, if you don't object.
Not at all.
He sat in the shade of a still-standing adobe wall, and nipped at the bottle Frank Morgan had given to him.
Not really much of a drinking man. Well, I appreciate it, mister. I gotta say, it don't help much.
Nothing will but time.
Morgan hunkered on his heels in the shade.
Yeah. No, not even that'll do. Some things can't be forgive or forgot. My wife lost our home. Three of our boys. Tell me how time's gonna help that.
You lost your sons in the fire?
Three of the four. I grabbed the youngest and went looking for the other three, but I couldn't find them nowhere. He's off somewhere in town. You know how boys are. Always underfoot, except when you're looking for them.
Yeah.
God. Tore my heart out to leave without them. But them flames was practically on top of us already. There's nothing else I could do. I tell you though, mister, I'm already starting to wish I stayed and died with him.
One more death wouldn't have done anybody any good.
You don't know, mister. You just don't know.
Morgan had no answer for that. Nobody knew what was in another person's heart.
What you said earlier about it being your fault... Even if somebody set that fire, it wasn't you, was it?
No, but I caused it. Wouldn't have happened if I hadn't done what I did. I told the Lachlan brothers to get out of town. I got a posse together, and we cornered them with shotguns in a saloon, told them to get out of Flat Rock. We had to drop on them, so they didn't have much choice. But Steve Lachlan said nobody talked like that to the Lachlan brothers and got away with it. Said we'd be sorry. I reckon we are.
Lachlan. Figures.
Steve Lachlan and his brothers, Asa and Rance, all thought they were slick on the draw, and they had the kills to prove it. They were greedy and arrogant outlaws, and they murdered and plundered their way across the Lone Star State. The Texas Rangers had been on their trail for a while, but the Rangers were spread thin, and the Lachlan brothers had fast horses as well as fast guns. They had escaped from every trap the lawman had tried to set for them.
And Jed Ainsley came fogging in just as the smoke started to rise. He's riding into town for supplies from his spread northwest of here. He spotted Steve Lachlan with a torch setting fire to the grass. The wind was so high, Jed knew the fire had come straight for us, so he took off, hell for leather, to warn us. Lachlan saw him, opened up on him. Jed caught a bullet. He kept on anyway. Of course, didn't make much difference. Poor son of a gun died for nothing.
Bowman gestured vaguely to a blackened corpse that hardly looked human anymore.
There he lays, over yonder.
Morgan's jaw tightened. He wasn't a man given to brooding and pondering. But this was a rare occasion when he felt himself torn inside. Nothing was more feared by frontier folks than a prairie fire, and one look around Flat Rock was enough to see why. Anybody who started such a blaze, especially through resentment or even carelessness, was lower than dirt in Morgan's eyes. The fury he felt when he saw what had happened here warred with his long-ingrained desire to just be left alone and continue drifting.
They wasn't our blood, you know.
Pardon?
The boys. Blaze adopted, I guess you could say. We took them in to raise them when they was orphaned, because nobody else would. Our own kids are grown and gone. It didn't matter to my wife. She loved them like they were our own.
You saved one.
Yeah, but...
Bowman shook his head in helpless despair. Morgan rubbed his jaw. Clearly, no words he could say were going to offer any comfort to Al Bowman, and the whiskey wasn't helping either. So he did the only other thing he could.
You know where I can find these Lachlans?
Bowman's drooping head came up as he frowned in surprise.
You ain't thinking of going after him, are you, mister?
Anybody left alive in this town who's up to the job?
There's nobody here who's up to that job even when everybody was still alive.
You don't want them to get away with this, do you?
God, no. I didn't think there was anything anybody could do.
Frank straightened to his feet.
Maybe I can.
Bowman blinked as he looked up at Morgan, a dark shape with the afternoon sun behind him.
Who are you, mister?
Name's Frank Morgan.
Bowman scrambled up.
Morgan? Well, I be. You mean you're Frank Morgan, the gunfighter?
Some call me that.
What are you doing in this part of the country?
Passing through, like I told you. Now, can you tell me where to find the Lachlans or not?
Bowman rubbed his mouth as a look of desperate hope came into his eyes.
I've heard rumors that they're hanging around a road ranch and a stage station about 10 miles north of here, on a trail to Lubbock, a place called Vinegar Hill. Don't ask me why, there ain't many hills in these parts.
Much obliged.
Morgan turned toward the gun, which stood nearby waiting patiently with its reins dangling. Bowman took a quick step after it.
Wait a minute. Are you really going after him?
Morgan looked around at the burned town.
I figure if I don't, it's liable to stick in my craw.
Then I just got one request to you, Mr. Morgan. Take me with you.
Morgan's mouth tightened as he gestured toward the woman who had finally gotten up and was now wandering around aimlessly in circles.
Don't you think you ought to be trying to comfort your wife?
She don't want no comfort from me. She just wants things back the way they were. And there's something no man can do. No God either, I reckon. Like the good book says, a moving finger is writ. The page is turned. All that's left now is settling the score.
It's your choice. I don't tell any man how to live his life.
I don't care about living. Just dying. I want to be there to see it when those damn Lachlans cross the divide.
Morgan swung into the saddle.
Up to you to keep up, then.
He turned the gun and prodded it into motion, heading north out of Flat Rock. He figured Bowman would give up the damn fool idea, but he had underestimated the man's determination. When he looked back a few minutes later, he saw that Bowman had gotten hold of a horse somewhere and was riding after him, bouncing awkwardly in the saddle. Morgan shook his head and slowed the gun so that Bowman could catch up to him. When he did, Morgan saw that Bowman had a revolver stuck behind his belt.
Where'd you get that gun?
Made the town marshal give it to me. He didn't care anymore. Said he's riding out and never coming back. Thought I might need a gun, so I thought I might help you.
Damn, last thing I need going up against three gun wolves like Steve, Asa, and Rance Lachlan is some grief-stricken townie helping me. Maybe I should just reach over and wallop him. Might be best if he's out cold until this showdown with the Lachlans is over.
But there was a look of such pathetic eagerness in Bowman's eyes that Morgan couldn't do it. He didn't think Bowman was going to find what he was really looking for at Vinegar Hill. But short of violence, the man wouldn't be stopped now.
When we get there, stay out of the way. This is my kind of work, not yours.
I'll only take a hand if I need to.
They rode the rest of the way in silence, because, really, what was left to say? After about 9 hot and dusty miles, they came in sight of the low, rambling adobe building with the sod roof.
That's it. That's Vinegar Hill.
Bowman leaned forward in the saddle.
Those horses tied up in front belong to the Lachlan brothers. I recognize them.
Last chance to go home, Bowman.
No, sir. I got no home to go to, not after today.
The men inside the road ranch either heard the horses or saw them coming. The three ambled out of the door, then began spreading out.
They know what they're doing.
The skinny one with the buckskin jacket and the long tangled hair under a flat-crowned brown hat moved over to the water trough and propped his left foot on it. The short one, who was about as wide as he was tall, crossed his arms over his massive chest and leaned back against the wall beside the door. The third man, about as tall as the skinny one but heavier, with a dark mustache drooping over his mouth, went the other way and stopped by the corral fence. He had a Winchester cradled in his arms.
Steve, Asa, and Rance, right in order. Never crossed trails with them before, but I seen their pictures on enough reward dodgers tacked to trees. Killed crazy scums, a lot of them. Especially Steve. The other two might gun down somebody in a robbery. But only Steve is loco enough to set a fire that he knew would destroy an entire town.
Howdy, mister. You know you got a turd following you.
I never knew a turd to ride a horse before.
Who are you, mister, and what do you want?
Never taking his eyes off them, Morgan dismounted without answering. He wanted to be on solid ground for this.
You'd be the Lachlan brothers, I reckon.
That's right. But you got the advantage on us, friend.
I'm no friend to snakes like you.
Steve's arrogant grin disappeared as he lowered his left foot to the ground and dropped his casual pose. He wore two guns, fancy ivory-handled pistols. Asa was a two-gun man as well, wearing them butt forward in cross-draw rigs that hung from bandoliers crossed over his broad chest. Rance had a Colt, too, but he was best with a rifle, Morgan recalled. He made it a habit to know as much as he could about men he might have to face in a showdown one of these days. It came in handy.
Oh, well, you some kind of lawman? Texas Ranger, maybe?
Lawman? Not hardly. Just an hombre who doesn't like what you did today.
You mean burning out Turd Face here and his friends? Well, hell, they had it coming. They should have known better than to run Lachlan brothers out of town. I mean, that's just like spitting in the wind. Hey, speaking of which, that was some kind of wind earlier today, wasn't it? Whew, I never saw flames move so fast in all my born days.
So you don't deny what you did?
Deny it? Hell, I'm proud of it. It ain't every day that a fella can destroy a whole town.
Slowly, Morgan nodded.
You know, Lachlan, I haven't enjoyed killing most of the men I killed. But I think I'm gonna enjoy killing you.
Well, now that's mighty big talk for somebody who won't even tell us who he is. But you know what? I think you're nobody. I think you're just one more stupid bastard who's got it coming to him.
Steve, I think I know who this hombre is. I seen pictures of him. He's Frank Morgan.
Morgan! Gun the son of a bitch!
Then it was like it always was, as time seemed to slow down for Frank Morgan. With the speed that was natural to him as breathing, he drew his gun. He had heard that despite his bulky build, Asa was the fastest Lachlan brother, so his first bullet tore out Asa's throat. Morgan pivoted, crouching as he shifted his aim, and pumped a slug into Rance's chest, driving him over backwards. The rifle in Rance's hands fired, but the barrel was already tilted skyward. Morgan shifted smoothly, anticipating Steve's shots. Steve didn't disappoint. The slug flew past Morgan's head. His Colt came to bear on Steve, but before he could pull the trigger, bullets pounded into Steve Lachlan's body, making him do a jittery little dance as he backed up to the adobe wall behind him. Al Bowman walked forward, gun in hand.
You have it coming! You!
He pulled the trigger again. Bowman lowered the gun as Steve Lachlan's corpse slid down the wall to come to rest propped in a sitting position on the ground. The last two bullets had turned Lachlan's face into a ghastly crimson smear. Morgan hadn't even seen Bowman dismount. All his attention had been focused on his opponents, not this unlikeliest of allies.
He's dead. Isn't he?
Considering that's his brains and blood all over the wall, I'd say so. I told you to stay out of it.
I didn't think you were gonna get him in time. I thought he was gonna kill you.
Morgan figured that Bowman could tell himself that all he wanted to. The man might even believe it.
But it doesn't really matter.
Morgan punched the empty loads out of his Colt and slid fresh cartridges into the chamber. He spoke without looking at Bowman.
Well, it's done with. You can go back to your wife and boy now. Make something out of what's left of your life, Bowman. That's all I can tell you.
You're not coming back to town?
No, no reason to. Like I've told you, I'm just passing through.
He pouched the iron, mounted, and took up the Dunn's reins.
There's nothing left for me to go back to.
Bowman looked at Steve Lachlan's body.
It doesn't change a thing. Not a damn thing. He started the fire. But I'm still to blame for what it did.
Morgan turned the horse. Morgan knew you couldn't talk to a man in the state that Bowman was in. He'd have to find his own way out.
Thanks, Mr. Morgan. Thanks for your help. But Mr. Morgan, there's one bullet left in this gun.
Morgan's head jerked up, twisted in the saddle, and looked around in time to see Al Bowman's body slumped to the ground. Morgan had draped Bowman's lifeless body over the saddle of the man's horse and taken him home.
Well, Stormy, guess I ended up having a reason to go back to the settlement after all.
He lowered the body to the charred ground at the feet of Bowman's wife. The woman looked at it for a long moment. She spat on the corpse.
It was his fault. All his fault. Big man who had a job to do. Had to run those outlaws out of town. He had it coming.
Morgan was getting damned sick and tired of hearing that. Morgan departed Flat Rock, leaving the devastation behind him. He thought that within days, sprigs of green grass would begin to poke up out of the ground, where now there was nothing but ashes.
You know what, Stormy? I guess it's just nature's way of showing that it truly don't give a damn what happens to people. The world will turn, the rain will fall, and the grass will grow, no matter how much suffering the folks who live there have to endure. And the only ones immune to that pain are those who have nothing left to lose.
Like the man called the Drifter.
Last Gunfighter, Inferno, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2010, J.A. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2014, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication prohibited. Performed by Ken Jackson, James Konacek, Michael Glenn, Mort Shelby, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Laura Harris, Bradley Smith, and David Jordan. Directed by Rose Elizabeth Supan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers, James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. The Last Gunfighter theme music and original music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Tracy Coffin. If you enjoyed The Last Gunfighter Inferno, read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com and be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Preacher, The First Mountain Man, Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, and McAllister series, all available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts. Now, keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio. We appreciate it.
Agent Barton, let me remind you that there is no telling what information the Black Widow may have acquired while roaming around up here.
I am aware of that risk.
So you understand why she can't be allowed to leave S.H.I.E.L.D. custody. You know her record, Agent. This isn't someone who's just made a couple of bad choices. This is a woman who is up to her neck in innocent blood.
Is this an order to take her out no matter what she does or says? Because I don't like it, Commander.
I don't like it either, Agent Barton. But I don't think she can be turned, and she certainly can't be allowed to roam free. What choice does that leave us?
Graphic Audio presents Marvel's New Avengers Breakout by Alisa Quitney, adapted from the graphic novel by Brian Michael Bendis and David Finch.
Our intelligence says the Fantastic Four are out of the country, the X-Men are preoccupied, and the Avengers have called it quits. We believe the time is now.
Spider-Man, you need to wait for backup.
I'm not planning on taking the full tour of the underworld on my own. I'm just scouting around up here to get a picture of what's... Whoa. I'm getting a bad feeling here.
What kind of bad feeling?
The kind that says the evening's probably not gonna end well.
Last night's job isn't done yet. There's still a lot of dangerous criminals out there.
Like I told you, I'm working on it.
Don't think it's a one-man job. Not even a lot of one-man jobs. This is going to take a team effort, Tony.
So, the Avengers are a team again?
I don't know, sir.
And what did you tell Hydra?
I told them it looked like it was happening. Was that the right thing to do?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Savage Land. On behalf of myself and my flight attendant here, we thank you for flying with us today.
If what just happened here was you playing me, then go ahead and shoot.
Of course I was playing you, the same as you are playing me now. I must admit you're very good, to risk it all just to wrangle a little more information.
Look, I know it's kind of embarrassing, but let's face it. What just happened here, you can't tell me that was part of some plan.
Please, don't insult my intelligence.
We came together at the raft breakout by chance, or fate, or whatever the hell it was. And then you came up with the idea of making us a team again. It was a good idea. Because the bad guys are working together, that means we need to work together too. They've got mad scientists and shape-shifting superfighters and high-tech experimental weapons and God knows what else. So we need all the help we can get.
Agent Romanova, the Black Widow. I've heard a rumor that you're working with S.H.I.E.L.D. now. Is that true?
Not with S.H.I.E.L.D., Director Fury. With the New Avengers.
Copyright Marvel.
Graphic Audio presents Simon R. Green's Ghost Finders.
Everybody knows there are bad places in the world.
We're not alone. There's something here with us. No visible presence. Can't say I actually heard or smelt anything. But there's definitely a sense of being observed, and not in a good way.
As the world changes, so do the way in which we see ghosts.
Something's down here with us, and it's not anything I expected. This isn't like anything we've ever encountered before, people. This is something new. Or maybe something very old come round again. Big and powerful and utterly different.
From dark shapes in the night and ancestral revenants, to lovers separated too soon and thwarted enemies, from stone tape recordings and electromagnetic phenomena, to men and women caught in repeating loops of time like insects trapped in amber. Ghosts have always been with us, like guests reluctant to leave the party, like bad memories that just won't go away.
Come on, JC, you're feeling this too, I can tell. Like ice in your blood, knives at your throat, like something really bad could come charging out of that tunnel mouth at any moment. And for everything you feel, it's 1,000 times worse for me. Who's afraid of the big werewolf, JC? I am.
Ghosts are nightmares of the past, refusing to give way to the present. Mankind's dark side. Humanity's unconscious. England's dreaming. And so, in this brave new 21st century, don't expect ghosts to be limited to old manor houses or abandoned rectories. Of course, not all ghosts are dark forces intent on humanity's ruin. Some are just poor, lost souls trying to find their way home. And they can be the most dangerous of all.
I feel so cold and alone.
You're not alone anymore. I'm here. We're all here to help you. I'm JC.
I'm Kim. I shouldn't be here, should I?
We are the Carnacki Institute. Agents trained and armed to stand between humanity and all the forces of the afterworlds. Now, are you going to leave quietly, or are we going to have to give you a good kicking and then boot your nasty arse out of here?
He hasn't got an arse!
Then we'll improvise.
Ghost Finders.
Available now in graphic audio.
A storm at sea has left Horace Del Rosa, the lone survivor of a shipwreck, as he voyages to join the Crusades.
Sukarno in Nabito.
Is Sukarno?
Taken prisoner, he is made a slave in Akeshia, the land of the enemy, whose language and culture are completely unknown to him.
What is this place?
The Iron Desert.
I'm Horace, from Arnos. From Tynes, specifically. What's your name?
Jerom, son of Kieran, of the Mojave clan.
Ex-gladiator and fellow slave Jerom helps him to survive, but they're separated when Horace discovers powers he didn't know he had.
Stop!
They don't know what to do with you. You're a slave and a foreigner. But you also have Zoanna, so you can't be a slave.
What's a Zoanna?
The power that our masters wield. They call it Zoanna.
Powers which draw the attention of the Queen, winning Horace freedom and status, and sparking hatred in the hearts of traitors within the royal court.
Sire, Chancellor Unagan says these rooms have been provided to you by the Queen. You are to remain here until Her Majesty calls for you, but you are her guest. I am Alira. I'll be your servant while you stay in the palace. Shall I help you remove your clothes?
Akeshia's politics are not unlike her myths. Polite and cultured on the surface, but teeming with danger underneath.
Pardon me, Your Excellence, but why am I here?
I wanted to measure you for myself. To evaluate you without all the prying eyes of the court. I want to know what kind of man you are to wield such power.
When we were flying over Omikur, Byleth unleashed a storm against the defenders. It was horrible. Entire buildings collapsed as lightning.
Did you say she unleashed a storm? If there's even a chance that Lord Astapta and the Queen can control the chaos storms, I have to make sure they can't use that power. It would change everything. No army would be able to stand against them.
What can I do to help?
Horus must navigate the treacherous waters of Akeshian politics and, with the help of Alira, a lovely spy within the palace, find a path to freedom for Jerom and the Empire's caste of slaves, victims of a system in which all men and women must lose their lives or live in chains. The choice of blood or iron. Enter the enchanted and dangerous world contained in John Sprunk's Book of the Black Earth. Now available in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, You can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.